If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
All right, beginning in the 1970s, writer and producer Norman Lear forever altered the television landscape with such groundbreaking situation comedies as All in the Family, Maude, Good Times, Sanford and Son, The Jeffersons, One Day at a Time, and so many others. And for over half a century, his body of work boldly tackled race, class, sexuality, politics, religion, topics previously considered too taboo for the small screen. Now, the new book, Norman Lear, His Life and Times, is the unforgettable story of an extraordinary seven-decade career. Veteran author and entertainment journalist Trip Wetzel offers an intimate portrait of Lear that is the product of years of research and numerous interviews. And to talk about the journey to put this book together is Trip Wetzel. Trip, how are you?
I'm good, Dave. How are you? Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you as well. You know, this guy was an absolute broadcasting legend. He was in television and film. He was a political and social activist, a philanthropist. What did it take, Trip, to put this book together?
Well, it was a labor of love. I have been working on it a couple of years, but it took a lot of certainly a lot of time and research. But I also had a great time doing it. I teach a class with him at Emerson College in Boston, where I'm an affiliated faculty member, which is how the project ultimately came about. Norman was one of my childhood heroes, having grown up in the 1970s, you know, watching him as a young boy and, you know, just loving his shows. Would watch him with my grandparents when I was a young kid and just gravitated to his shows. And it was a book that I'd wanted to do for many years, and it was a dream project. So it was a lot of fun.
You know what I was going to say, for the 70s, as you mentioned, you know, his programs were viewed by 120 million people a week. And, you know, All in the Family led the number one spot from 71 to 76, I think, until Happy Days took it over in the Nielsen ratings, you know, 22 Emmys, 4 for Best Comedy. I mean, that is the gem for him. That is the golden gem.
Yes, I think it is. I mean, there's no question it is. I mean, that was the show that really started it all for him in the 1970s, All in the Family. You know, because it was the first show that dealt with, of course, controversial issues, topical issues, in a way that had never been done before on television.
Now, you mentioned Emerson College. I think Norman was there for a little bit before he joined the Air Force, right?
Yes, he was. He was there for a year and a half on a scholarship, which he got from the American Legion for a essay he wrote called The Constitution and Me about growing up being Jewish as a young Jewish American in the 1930s. And he got the first prize was a four-year scholarship to Emerson College. He was majoring in drama at the time, and when Pearl Harbor happened, and he wanted to go out to fight for war, so he did a very heroic thing. But he always remained very loyal to Emerson, even though he was only there for a semester and a half.
And before that, even, you know, he had an interesting childhood, and his dad, I would say, was a bit of a schemer, and landed him in jail. And, you know, I had heard Norman said, and it's in your book too, that he loved him, but he didn't want to be much like him.
No, I think that was a very difficult relationship that he had, and I think it took him for the remainder of his life to come to terms with it, if he ever did. He was in therapy in his 80s about it, because it was just, you know, to have your dad, you know, go to prison for selling fake securities, and to me, he was a crook, and Norman wanted to dismiss that. Obviously, he tried to dismiss that as best he could as a lovable rascal, but I think it was very hard for him to come to terms with that. It took him many years to finally accept that to the extent that he ever really could. I mean, how much can we really accept that?
It's true. Very true. Very, very true. You know, after the war, he moved to Los Angeles. He was in public relations. He was a door-to-door salesman. He did all kinds of things. But then, you know, it became writing comedy for television. People always say, you know, out of tragedy comes comedy. I think his father was a bit of a tragedy for him. But, you know, he started writing in early television, but also nightclub routines for Danny Thomas.
Yeah, well, the Danny Thomas thing was really what started him in television. He was working, he was a writing partner with Ed Simmons, who was the executive producer and head writer for the Carol Burnett Show in the 1970s at the time that All in the Family was, at the Norman was riding the huge crest of his success, and they formed a comedy writing team. Ed was married to Norman's cousin Elaine, and Norman didn't really want to be a comedy writer. He'd never had any aspirations to do this, but Ed did. And one night they were home babysitting while their wives were out at the movies, and Ed asked Norman to help him polish a routine on the film The Sheik of Araby, and he did, and they tried it out for their wives, and their wives got home, and they got such a good response out of their wives that Norman had the idea of, so why don't we start a comedy team? And so they did start a comedy writing team. Then they went around to start selling these bits to various, comedians around Los Angeles. And Danny Thomas, they had an idea for Danny Thomas about five words in the English language, in the Yiddish, that have no counterparts in any other language.
Yeah.
And Danny Thomas bought the bit, sort of sight unseen. There was a long story. There's a story in the book, which I won't reveal, let readers read it, about how he got him by calling his agent up at William Morris and getting his phone number and kind of working his way in. And the audience that night was when they were performing it at Ciro's, which is now the home of the Comedy Store Comedy Club,
Yeah. They
were... David Susskind, who actually turned out to be Norman's cousin and would also go on to be a talk show host himself, was packaging a new variety show for NBC called the Ford Star Review with Jack Haley,
who had
been the Tin Man, of course, in The Wizard of Oz.
Right.
And from there, all sort of crescendoed. Martin and Lewis saw a sketch that they did on the Ford Star Review and hired them for the Colgate Comedy Hour. They worked on that show for a couple of years until they couldn't take Jerry Lewis's out of control ego anymore, and they ultimately parted ways. But then they worked for the Martha Stewart show, the Martha Ray show, rather. They worked for George Gobel, all these other things. So yes, it was a big prolific career in variety television before all the stuff that happened in the 70s happened.
Well, I mean,
and then there were the films in between in the 1960s.
Yeah, I was going to say, though, but, this he was very sought after. I mean, this role was very, very, to get him to write for somebody's show. You mentioned Martha Ray, and it was the late 50s, and what I remember in the closing credits of so many of his shows was Tandem Productions with Bud Yorkin. But when they formed it in the late 50s, it was really about producing feature films rather than television. He didn't get into television right away like that.
Well, actually, yes and no. I mean, they had actually done, first of all, they met, Bud and Norman met when Bud was a stage manager on the Colgate Comedy Hour, and he became really the toast of the town in Hollywood in the late 50s when he did a Fred Astaire special, which was the highest rated special of all time, and of that year, he was just won every conceivable award imaginable, and his wife, Peg Yorkin, they were good friends with the Lears. They had kids the same age, and Norman's second wife, Frances, they were both feminists, and suggested to Norman one day, so, why don't you guys start a production company, thinking that, you two would be unstoppable if you did. That, again, had never occurred to Norman, it never occurred to Bud, but they started this company, Tandem Production, with the idea, actually, originally, that they did want to go into the television business, and some of their first vehicles were a couple of television specials for, they did a TV Guide award show, they did a special for Andy Williams, he did a special for Carol Channing, they did several television specials, they did something with Henry Fonda, but then they got into feature films. They actually did want to do sitcoms at first, but fortunately for them, it was not, the time was not right, and they were actually, one of their first sitcom efforts was, interestingly enough, torpedoed by Jim Aubrey, who at the time was the head of programming for CBS, and was sort of the mastermind behind all these rural shows on CBS that
Right.
proliferated throughout the 1960s.
Sure.
And basically screwed them, if I can say that on the radio,
yeah.
Because they had a show that they pitched called Band of Gold with Suzanne Fleshette, and I forget the other actor's name, and it looked like that they were going to, it was all go, and he was going to greenlight it, and they went to Acapulco with their wives for the weekend, and they got back and they find out that, you know, Jim Aubrey never had any intention of putting this on the air, which in retrospect was a good thing, because if this had happened, All in the Family might not have happened.
But he brought to the table this British sitcom that he was originally producing for ABC. He did several iterations of the pilot, and then when it finally came to air date and CBS bought it, you know, they kind of still wanted to pull it. They were kind of concerned about the show itself.
Oh, yeah, very much so. Well, first of all, you know, how it all came about really was that in 1967 he was doing another film called The Night They Raided Minsky's about a young Amish girl who accidentally invents a striptease in a burlesque house in New York City in the 1920s. So it was a very period piece. It was based on William Friedkin's novel of the same name, and it was a very successful movie with starring Elliot Gould in his first big screen role, Jason Robards, and in his last screen appearance, George Burt Lahr, who played the Cowardly Lion in The Wizard of Oz, who died on screen. And at the time he died on screen, he was actually able to wreak havoc in the editing suite because of his truncated appearance. And as Norman was trying to salvage his appearance, which he did, and the film, by the way, got very good reviews, including one from the late, great Chicago Sun-Times critic Roger Ebert, who really, it was one of his very first big film reviews, praised the film. But anyway, Norman, at the time that he was, you know, going through this tumult with, you know, the editing for The Night They Raided Minsky's, he read an item in Variety, well, actually TV Guide, in some instances he said Variety, some instances he said TV Guide, about this show in England that was making waves across the country called Till Death Us Do Part. And he was so inspired by it, and Bud Yorkin, meanwhile, told him about it, who had seen a tape and sent a tape to him to Norman. And it so reminded him of his relationship with his father, Herman, that he immediately sought out to buy the American rights, and which he initially and sold the pilot originally called Justice for All to ABC, which of course was a third rate, you know, kind of the poor stepchild to sort of poor sibling to NBC and CBS at that time. It was third in ratings, and sold one pilot. They didn't like it because of who the kids were. So he did a second pilot for with new set of kids played by Chip Oliver and Candace Azaria there was a show called Turn On Light by George Schlatter, which raised a lot of eyebrows and was canceled before it ended. And so Norman ended up scrapping the second pilot, and it languished for a couple of years before finally winding up at CBS, at which point CBS was trying to, you know, shed its image as the Hillbilly Network with all these rural shows and appeal to a hipper, younger audience. And that, as a result of that, and you know, very daring young programming executive named Fred Silverman, who actually got his start at WGN.
He did.
Yeah, so I just want to point that little fun fact out. And another programmer named Robert D. Wood, they, you know, were able to get the show on the air. But nevertheless, Bill Paley, you know, was very skittish about it. He thought that it was vulgar. Bill Paley, the very erudite founder and chairman of CBS, was concerned about it. And at first, they did not want to air that first show, Meet the Bunkers. And Norman was very adamant that they had to. He said that, you know, I'm not going to do it again. You know, take it or leave it. I'm not going to reshoot the pilot. And, you know, if you don't air this pilot I'm going to walk. He said, you know, his thinking was that you had to get all wet at once, as he often said at interviews, and meaning that you had to lay Archie threadbare, show all of his, you know, all of his bad side, all of his vituperous assists, everything like that. You just had to lay it threadbare. And he stuck to his guns, but they actually did not know until, right, literally, they were in the control room minutes before It was to air on January 12, 1971. They had just finished shooting the what was to be the fifth episode, Judging Books by Covers, which was the first episode to deal with homosexuality, when Mike, one of Archie's friends, played by Tony Garrett, who later went on to play Luke Spencer on General Hospital. You know, Archie thinks he's gay, and then it ends up being Archie's friends is gay. So they were actually in the studio at Television City in Hollywood shooting that at that exact time, and then this happened. So that's how it got on the air. But yes, you're right, CBS was very skittish about it at first.
Well, and then...
And even at, go ahead.
Well, and then came, you know, Maude, and then, you know, Sanford and Son, Good Times, Jefferson's, One Day at a Time, Mary Hartman. I mean, a lot of these were spinoffs, but he was on fire in the 1970s, for sure.
Yes, he absolutely was.
You know, and I think that, and everything, I feel like almost in the series Maude with B. Arthur, he pushed the envelope even further with that show.
Well, certainly he did with the abortion episode, and a lot of other episodes like that. You know, with Walter, the alcoholism episode with Walter, when Walter hits Maude, you had the episode where, you know, we see Maude as she's manic depressive and she wants to get Henry Fonda to run for president. There's that episode. Yes, that was, I think it did push the envelope a little further because, you know, he was able, he had the gravitas to do that the further he kicked the can down the road, so to speak.
Well, and plus, you know, so he had all this success. I mean, you know, here's the one thing that always fascinated me, Tripp, is that guys like him, guys like Dick Van Dyke, they just wanted to keep working. I mean, you know, even though the body finally gave out, they were all there. You know, we were still working at the end, you know, rebooting One Day at a Time and working on some other projects and doing some specials with Jimmy Kimmel like this. He didn't want to stop. He had such a, he could have lived another 30 years and not probably accomplished everything he wanted to accomplish in his career.
I think that's very true, and I think one of the reasons he just had a very natural curiosity about the world. He, you know, always looked towards a new day. His favorite saying was over and next. You know, once something is over, it's over and we're on to next. You know, he never looked back. I think he took pretty good care of himself. So I think all of those were big factors. And, of course, he had laughter in his life. And he always said that, you know, laughter has added time to my life as much as anything.
Yeah, absolutely. And he stayed very active. I mean, even out in between the producing, you know, he always spoke out for the Bill of Rights, had specifically, you know, an admiration, of course, for the First Amendment. He started the Environmental Media Association for the entertainment industry. I think he purchased one of the first copies of the Declaration of Independence.
Yes, he did. And he toured it around the country for 10 years. It was an amazing thing. You know, our country's birth certificate.
You know, it's funny, nominated for an Academy Award, inducted into the Television Hall of Fame, 4 Emmys, Humanist Arts Award, star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, National Medal of Arts. Absolutely incredible. I mean, this guy lived life to its fullest. And as I said, he didn't want to stop.
No, he didn't.
You know. And you had a chance, you had opportunities to interview him, right?
Yes, I did. Well, he was not able to participate in the book, unfortunately, as much as I would have liked.
As a journalist,
him, so.
You did.
But as a journalist, I interviewed him for TV Guide for the 40th anniversary of All in the Family, which was great, and he actually wrote me a letter afterwards. He was just an absolute mensch, and he zoomed in on my class at Emerson College 2 times, which was fabulous during the pandemic.
Yeah, that's
and
great.
My kids just loved it, and he called me afterwards, you know. It was an amazing thing.
That's awesome. Well, yeah. The new book, and we just touched a little bit about some of the highlights of Norman's life, but it's a great, great book. The new book is Norman Lear, His Life and Time. The author is Tripp Wetzel. Tripp, what a pleasure speaking with you about Norman. I have to imagine there's some other books coming our way.
It's been fabulous, and yes, there are, hopefully. I've got a few things that I'm trying to get going right now. I can't say yet because I'm superstitious, but hopefully so. But it's been a delight being on this show. As I said, I'm a big fan of your show, even though I live in New York.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that, Tripp, very much, and same of yours and those times and years of TV Guide as well, and I look forward to talking to you again.
Likewise.